The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation. WTBQ.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining me today on the Nonprofit Notebook with Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties. I'm your host, Janice Valentino. We're coming to you live today. So we are in the studio at WTBQ in Warwick. So if you have any questions or any comments that you would like to contribute, please feel free to call 845-651-1110. And we would be very happy to hear any of your comments. I just want to ask everybody, how are you doing? You know, we've, for the last 6 months, we have been surrounded with doubt a little bit and confusion and uneasiness. But one thing that we can count on right now is the beautiful change of season that we're going through. And from someone who loves summer so much and normally dreads the fall, I have to say that I am really looking forward to this season and all the joy that comes with it. And I'm hoping that all of you will as well. We can count on fall coming and we can count on winter and all of the seasons. So let us count on them and enjoy them. Something else that never changes is the comfort, care, and compassion that our patients and families receive with hospice care. Hospice care is known for recognizing the importance of addressing spiritual pain as part of total health care. And today, I am very, very happy to introduce to you our Director of Spiritual Care, Gary O'Connor. Gary.
Good morning. Good morning, Janice.
Good morning, Gary. I am so glad that you have joined me this morning. I think that what we're going to discuss is something that I think a lot of people may have questions about, maybe don't understand, because sometimes it's a little hard to understand what spiritual care really is, because I think a lot of us have predisposed understanding or opinions on what that is. But
absolutely,
I know that you're going to talk to us a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
How long have you been with hospice, and what made you get involved with spiritual care? Let's let our audience know a little bit about you.
So that leads me to tell a story that I haven't told for a long time.
I love stories.
Yeah, I do too. And I also want to say it's just so good to be here with you. It feels just right this morning.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, this is good already. Back in around 2005, 2006, I was in my community, in my 12-step community. There was a man who was really a guide and a mentor for so many people, and I didn't know him up close and personal. I just knew him from our group, and he was sick and getting sicker. He and his wife both were working class folks from Maybrook, and he was at home under some care. I didn't really understand too much about it, but she had asked around the community and to see if on certain days if anyone could come to be there with him, as she had to go to work. And at the time, I was working as a carpenter. That was my primary work, and I had a flexible schedule. And something in me wanted to say yes, and I offered Wednesdays to her. And so every Wednesday, for quite some time, I would go and sit with Mike. And I knew a lot of people around him. I knew his friends, and as they learned that I was spending time with him, they would talk to me about it. They would talk to me about their struggles. You know, I'd see them, and they would sometimes I'd hear things like, I would come, but I don't know what to say. I'm so uncomfortable.
Yes.
And I really didn't have a lot to offer at that time along those lines. But the learning for me was that actually I wanted to be there. And I certainly had my anxieties and fears about being there. But most of the time I could settle in and I could be there with him. And I found myself opening up to the experience. So one day I'm there. I wasn't there on a Wednesday. It was a different day. And this guy came to the door, said he was from hospice. Big, burly guy. His name was Marty. Do you remember Marty, Janice?
Absolutely, I remember Marty. Marty was an amazing nurse. Oh, he was just very well loved and very, very well received by patients and families. Absolutely, I remember Marty.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And Marty had already established a really good relationship with Mike. Mike was still pretty with it at that time, though his body was deteriorating. And so I started landing there on the same day as Marty. So we'd have these kind of tripart visits. And at some point, as Marty was leaving one day, he said, "You're good at this. Ever think about volunteering at hospice?" And I was curious.
Yes, I remember now. Go ahead.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice to think about Marty, isn't it? What a wonderful man.
Yes.
And so I said yes. And kind of along a parallel track, my spiritual community, two of the brightest lights in that community were doing something in the hospitals. And I had no idea what they were up to, but it was related both to their spiritual practice and to caregiving. And they were the most dynamic duo in my spiritual community. And whatever they were about, I was interested. At that time in my life, I was very much a loner. I lived alone. I had relationships, friends and family, but my life was very solitary by my choice. I worked solo as a carpenter. I could go all day without talking to anybody except when I bought my cup of coffee. So, as you can imagine, all of this was kind of a stretch for me. Mm. And what I learned was that those two guys in my spiritual community were stepping into chaplaincy. They had started training professionally as chaplains, and they were doing work in the hospitals. And a program evolved out of my spiritual community, and I entered that program in its first year and didn't leave for, I think, 7 years.
Wow.
I had more professional training than anybody needs to do this work, at least in terms of getting credentials.
Yes.
But it was so transformative. And so, again, along the same track, I started volunteering with hospice. My professional training was going on. I had no desire to turn it into a job, none whatsoever. I was just the possibility for actually engaging in a lived way with my spiritual practice was huge as I started to both to train as a chaplain and to volunteer for hospice. Mm. And one thing led to another. I got enough credentials under my belt. Hospice hired me as a per diem chaplain. In the meantime, I got a job at the LGBT Senior Center in New York as a counselor. Kind of willy-nilly, I found myself in this work. I kept going, Janice, and just followed my heart straight through.
That's all that we can do, especially people who are affiliated and work in the hospice arena. It's a calling. Mm-hmm. It is a calling on every level.
That's so funny you use that word. So back in the day, I would never have used that language, and now I use it absolutely, you know, with no reservation.
Yes.
Back then, calling sounded, it sounded religious in a way that I really wasn't comfortable with, and all of that has settled down quite nicely.
Yeah.
This is what I'm good at, and this is what I can give, and in giving in this way, and to have livelihood.
Yes.
That is, essentially, I'm paid to love and pay attention to people.
Yeah, isn't that That's a blessing.
It's like I won the lottery. It's
a blessing. You know, it's interesting because I think that spirituality many times is equated with religion, very specific mm-hmm. religions. But spiritual care includes any belief and practice that help people to find meaning and comfort and hope. And
Especially
at the end of life, which is of course, certainly what we are experts at in every way, shape, and form.
Absolutely.
One of the things I want to ask you over your experience is what do you see as some of the spiritual needs of a dying person? Because you certainly have been with many, many people of all ages and all walks of life and different backgrounds and family backgrounds. And we all have different needs, but they may be different, but they're still very much a need, even though it might not be something that we understand.
Right. I mean, you touched on it already when you said there might be this sort of received notion that spiritual care is necessarily religious in its look, in its in the conduct of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be, and often I'm called to that role for some. Some of the patients and families I serve, I'm very much, I'm functioning as clergy for them in ways that are quite traditional. So that doesn't mean that I'm replacing their priest or minister.
Right.
Usually in those cases, there isn't a priest or minister, that's... that they have a relationship with or has been part of their life. But at that time in their life, that becomes important. Maybe it's been important all the way along. It's just been missing,
right.
You know. So kind of a traditional look and the traditional functioning of it,
right.
I'm very much that. Sometimes I joke to my friends in the city, and it's not because it's true, that I'm an upstate minister. And you know yourself, I'm not a congregational minister. I don't function outside of hospice with the congregation, though I speak and I have served in some. But often I'm serving in that role. The work is to know if that's what's needed.
Right. Gary.
So
we're gonna hold that right there, and we're gonna come back, and we're going to follow up with what you just said about knowing what's needed. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
Hospice is for managing pain and making things easier.
Dear Hospice, on behalf of my family, thank you for the help and care you gave to our mother. Mom really wanted to be home with her husband, children, and grandchildren. And Hospice helped us make that possible. It was great to have the wheelchair, especially the adjustable bed. Everything was there when we needed it. But most of all, we remember the people. You all did so much, not just to make Mom comfortable, but to comfort us as well. For that, we'll always be grateful.
Hospice is more than you may think. With nurses just a phone call away, with social workers to talk to or just to listen, hospice is a way to help both patients and their families feel better. Hospice is a plan for living.
Call Hospice of Orange and Sullivan at 561-6111 or visit hospiceoforange.com, because hospice is a plan for living.
This is Gene from Gem Home Inspections.
Courtney Mills from Gem Home Inspections.
Mike Kamantar with Hudson United Mortgage.
Christine Koenig.
Grace Warren.
Marcia Talbot
of Better Homes and Gardens Rand Realty and the hosts of The Real Real Estate Show Mondays at 10 a.m.
We're here to help you out.
WTBQ.
Good morning, and welcome back. You are listening to the Nonprofit Notebook for Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties. I'm Janice Valentino. We are talking to our spiritual care director, Gary O'Connor. And Gary was just talking to us about knowing, I believe you had said, Gary, what is appropriate for when it's time for you to do what you need to do for various families and patients.
Right, which can look like many, many different things.
Yes.
Many different things. So, you know, one way to orient oneself to that is what has been meaningful, right, in the past,
yes.
perhaps?
Yes.
What's meaningful now, right? But then to also look where have there possibly been breaks in that, discontinuities. And discontinuities aren't necessarily bad. People, you know, change their path and for good reasons at times, you know, throughout their life. But are there breaks and discontinuities where there's a need for healing and repair, right?
Yes.
Another way to think about it too is what needs to be maintained to provide spiritual comfort. That can look like so many different things. So I have a patient who I'm working with right now. He's about my age. His mother is part of his life, an older woman, and his younger brother. So they come to visit, but he's by himself a lot. Mm. And so a lot of my work has been, because he's accepting of it, first of all, there's that. Do I even want the involvement of a chaplain? Generally, I have to say, if I get even my foot in the door a little bit, we usually get a meaningful relationship going, one that's going to provide some support and help to the patient. So I'll call this guy Bill. It's not his real name.
Right.
And as I got to know him, I found out that a number of things, one of which is that he really likes rock and roll. And one of the ways we established rapport and got things going, we talked about what music you like. So on my second visit, I brought in the speaker and I said, pick out a couple songs that you like. And that was great. So I had my little portable speaker and he loves Lynyrd Skynyrd. Do you know the band?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Hard rock southern band.
Yes.
I'm old enough to have seen them like back in the day many times in the 70s. So there's some affinity there.
Yeah. And, well, I just remember Free Bird. Okay, that was the big
Lynyrd
Skynyrd song back in the day. And I'm dating myself, but yeah, Free Bird was the big one.
Same here. Yeah, I was one of those guys out there yelling, Free Bird. So on our second visit, Harry and I put on some Lynyrd Skynyrd and sang along with it, good and loud. Along the way, I also learned that while he's not church-going, he's deeply moved by the Psalms. So we often, you know, what a mix, right? So I often, and he gets agitated sometimes. And most of the time, if I come in, offer to read one of the Psalms, he'll close his eyes and sit quietly and then say a word about, you know, he feels more at peace and more at ease. So it can look like that.
Absolutely. I mean, the Psalms, you know, the Psalms really are music. They really are lyrics to music.
They are indeed. They're songs.
They're songs. And the way those words, you know, in the Bible were written to give comfort, so does music in today and yesterday and in the future. So everybody has their taste of music and what gives them comfort, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you were able to put both together for him, and
that's really just
a wonderful thing. Really validating him in some way.
Yeah, and there's such joy in that.
There's
joy. It's so often, you know, you got to be careful to talk how you talk about your work, like at a dinner or a cocktail party, right?
Yes.
You know, so often I say, I work for hospice, I'm a chaplain, and you get, and you're elevated to the point of sainthood, or you hear things like how depressing.
Yes.
I am not depressed by my work at all. I'm sad sometimes, for sure. I'm many things in the work, you know. If I'm fully present, I have a full range of emotion, as do the people I'm caring for.
Right.
My ability to pay attention to my own emotions and pay attention to theirs is is critical to how you do the work and how you do it well.
Yes.
So I can go off on long stories.
Well, that's okay. You know, like this is how we learn. This is how we digest information through stories. Yeah. And as you know, that's what I do. I'm a storyteller for hospice, right? So I do all of the marketing and the community outreach, and I also have the blessing and the privilege to tell actual family patient stories of the care that they receive. But I think it's important for people to understand that when hospice was created way back, and it's over 100 years now, Cicely Dame. Dame Cicely Saunders is her name. She was the one that started hospice. And it was interesting that she made spiritual care one of the four pillars of hospice care that included the physical, the mental, the psychosocial aspect of end-of-life care, but also added the spiritual.
And, it wasn't even added. That was integral. And boy, she got that right.
Yes.
As does my boss also. Mm-hmm. You know, sees that as being, you know, essential
yes.
to what we do. It shows up in this way too, Janice. So I've had more than a couple cases. Collaboration. One of the things I do as a chaplain is I collaborate with the rest of the team. Like we really talk to each other.
Yes.
You know, and consult. And what's so important about that is that it allows for multiple viewpoints. We will see it from both from the domain of our discipline and from our from the lens of our own experience as well. And so one doesn't have to settle it for the other. I might have a different experience of the patient than the nurse does. I think of more than a few cases where the LPN or the nurse has come to me and said, I don't know what's going on here. I mean, this patient has enough pain medication, enough anxiety meds to settle, to allow them to be comfortable, and it ain't happening. What's going on?
There's something else.
You go see them.
Yes.
Something else is going on.
Yes.
And often it's, all these things kind of blend together, but it's psychosocial, spiritual issues.
Yes.
That need to be addressed. And sometimes, Janice, that's just hearing them. It's not, we're not there. If we get into this fix it mode, we're kind of done, you know?
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, we have to be there. Be present for them.
We have to be curious about what's going on, first
yes.
of all.
Yes.
And set our big ideas aside. It doesn't mean setting our skills aside and our experience, but each time we go into the room, each time we're in front of that patient, you know, we can ask the question, who is this now and what's needed, right?
I love that you just said all we need to do is just set our experience and our knowledge aside. I love that, Gary, because what it does is it actually allows us, regardless of where we are in the hospice organization, it allows us to know that we know what we're doing, right? And we can be proud of the work that we do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay to set that aside and just be present at that moment for what that person in front of us needs. It doesn't mean, you're absolutely right, that we don't know what we're doing and we don't have to show that. Put it aside and let's see, what is this person in need of? Believe it or not, I experience that many times when I'm speaking with families, especially after maybe a family member has passed and they are very, very, they have a lot of conflicting feelings and things are going on and they're questioning maybe about memorial donations that were made and they need to have more information. And you can just see that they're just so overwhelmed with everything that has happened.
Right. That's what needs to be addressed in that moment, right?
Absolutely.
You don't need to be, you got to deal with the nuts and bolts too.
Yes.
Our experience and our knowledge is a foundation.
Right.
But what's being presented in that moment mm-hmm. is worry, concern, anxiety, right?
Right.
So that has to, in every religious tradition, there's this idea of witness, right? Witnessing.
Yes.
And it's also witnessing another one, both not just in their despair, but in their celebration as well. I just did a service in Warwick 2 days ago,
mm-hmm.
Truly a party, but it was also a memorial service as well.
Yes.
Very, very upbeat, and plenty of sadness to go
yes.
around as well. But everyone, friends and family, were witnessing each other.
Yes, that's the important
thing. So powerful. So enlivening.
It is.
Right?
It really
so
is, Gary. Well, listen, Gary, we're going to have to kind of wrap it up. A half hour goes very, very fast.
It does.
It really
does.
So thank you so much for joining me today. I think that we're probably going to do this again because I think that there's a lot that still we need to cover.
Happy to come back.
And we will do that. So I just want to say to everybody today, it's about validating each other. It's about validating our lives. And that's the most important thing. So thank you all for joining us. And let's remember that there are no mistakes in life, just lessons to be learned. Let us learn well together. Yes.
And I want to extend my gratitude and appreciation for the people I work with. I love them dearly.
Yes. Yes, I do as well. Thank you so much.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.